This is the state of things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Phoebe Judge. Burke Uzzell remembers taking some of his first photos as a teenager in rural eastern North Carolina. He set up his camera at a bus station and took snapshots of the southern culture that surrounded him. His skills with a camera grew, and he started working for the News and Observer as a high schooler. Eventually, Burke became the youngest photographer ever hired for Life magazine at the age of 23. Over the years, he took his camera with him as he witnessed pivotal moments in American history. His archive spans six decades and includes iconic photos of Martin Luther King Jr. and Woodstock. Today, Burke's photos feature images of his southern roots. He lives in Wilson, where he runs a photo studio and gallery. There, he continues to explore nuanced southern landscapes through his lens. Burke's photographs are featured in three new exhibits. Southern Landscapes is at the Nasher Museum of Art in Durham through September. American Chronicle is at the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh. And All About America opens at the Ackland Art Museum in Chapel Hill later this month. But first, Burke Uzzell joins me live in the studio. Welcome, Burke.
Thank you very much for having me here.
So tell us about growing up in Dunn, North Carolina, and how you immersed yourself in that community.
When we went on vacations, I always wanted to buy postcards, and then I wanted to buy a camera to take my own pictures. My mother discouraged me from that, saying, why not just be happy with the postcards? It was difficult to answer that until I showed her Life magazine. And I so loved seeing the world through Life magazine, and I knew right then that that's what I wanted to do, was to travel around the world and take photographs. So I started doing that in Dunn, North Carolina, working for the local newspapers.
And what was Dunn like? I mean, was it a place where you had people coming in and out? It certainly wasn't traveling the world, but were you seeing a lot of different types of people in Dunn?
I was. My dad was city manager of the little town, which meant that I met people of all sorts all the time. And I had a bicycle, and when a tobacco barn would catch fire somewhere in the county, I would ride my bicycle as fast as I can behind the fire truck, take pictures with some little cheap camera, and then sold them to the state newspapers. I would come home, develop them in a dark room, put them on a bus, send them to the state newspapers, and they would run them the next morning. Later on, I was able to buy a slightly better camera and then an even better one.
You grew up in Dunn, in kind of quintessential North Carolina southern landscapes, which have been a focus of much of your work. Your mother grew up in a farm in eastern North Carolina, and you've talked about going to your grandfather's house, riding on a family mule. How have these kind of perfect landscapes influenced the way you take pictures?
Well, they certainly keep my feet on the ground, because I know what it's like to have the back of a mule as a cushion, which is not always pleasant, but fun. I know what it's like to be on a farm, and I know what it's like to live in a small town and be amongst people of all sorts. And I love these people, and they always gave me a reason to appreciate so many things about humanity. And they really were my education for working at Life magazine.
You said you were a teenager when you first started taking pictures. What was the first picture you really remember taking, or at least being proud of?
Oh, my goodness. Tough question. At any given moment, I've always liked the last picture I did until I take the next picture, and then I like it even better. And each one is a learning experience, of course. So from day to day, I have a brand new favorite each day. So, but you know, the little things I would do from the back of my bicycle, I was very proud of, and rattling around my camera in the basket of a bicycle. So those I was very proud of.
And do you remember the first camera you ever bought? What it was?
It was some sort of cheap little box camera, I know, and you know, it cost very little money. Made enough money with that to buy a better speed graphic, a roller cord, and one thing and another.
Tell us about working part-time at night for the News and Observer when you were in high school. What photos were you taking?
Well, the News and Observer and the other state newspapers had come to know me as I was in high school. And the News and Observer was nice enough to offer me a part-time job, starting in the late afternoon and working into the night, even as I was in high school. So I would drive to Raleigh, work for the paper, take pictures. The next morning, on my morning paper route in Dunn, North Carolina, delivering the newspapers on my bicycle, I was sometimes lucky enough to see the photograph I'd taken the day before in Raleigh. Not always, but that was a kick. And so they, if nothing else, appreciated my determination. And so they offered me a job when I graduated from high school. And that's what happened.
So when you were driving, you'd end school, you'd get in the car and you'd go and you'd be taking pictures of anything they assigned you. Did you have a specialty or?
My specialty was being energetic and not taking no for an answer. So anything that would come up, they knew that they could send me, and I would be very sure to come back with something. Might not be capable of the Museum of Modern Art, but it was something that would have some sort of special quality about it. So I was always a very eclectic person in my taste for subject matter. And they appreciated that.
And this is all film, of course, that you were developing. I mean, now everyone just takes it with their phone and then it sends it around. But you would go out and take the picture and then go back to the office and I assume have to develop these.
We did that. And in those days, the chief photographer insisted that you know how to come back into the dark room with a roll of film or a sheet of film, develop it, print it, print the negative wet, have it on the city editor's desk in about 10 minutes. So it did quite a lot of doing, but it happened. And to tell you the truth, I was probably more capable of getting a picture out that way than I am now with an iPhone.
So you graduate, you get the job at the News and Observer taking pictures, you're getting more and more work, but still living in the South. I'd like to focus on one of your recent photos now that kind of depicts some of these Southern landscapes. Will you tell us about this picture? It's called Tire Swing. I'm looking at it. It's a picture of a tire swing in what looks to be fall, maybe, or there's no leaves on the tree. What is this picture about?
That picture is about the charm of the South that happens in a lovely, quiet landscape up in Virginia. And it has to do with riding around on small country roads and just seeing things that speak to me about the sensuality and the poetry and the beauty of the Southern landscape. I think we have a look and a feel all our own in the South. And I, you know, it's not always dramatic, but it can be very quietly and beautifully and poetic. So I saw that tire swing and the contrast between the beauty of the trees and the graphics of all of that, with that stark tire hanging down from a tree way up above, was a lovely kind of humorous and whimsical contrast in the landscape.
Burke Uzzell is a North Carolina photographer. His work is featured in new exhibits at the National Museum of Art in Durham, the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh, and later this month at the Ackland Art Museum in Chapel Hill. Burke, you eventually moved to Atlanta. What brought you down there, and what was it like to move out of North Carolina?
Well, when I had $200 saved and my wife was 7 months pregnant, I thought that would be a really good time to go into freelance photography and quit my job and pursue other issues on a broader scale. So off we went to Atlanta, Georgia, where I had a job as an assistant with another photographer. And I just needed more action. I had seen these big-time photographers come through on assignment. They were kind enough to encourage me and talk to me and offer me guidance. And I knew that had to do with turning up the dial a bit with my surroundings. And of course, Atlanta was a great choice. It was in the South and there were very good people working there. There was a Life magazine bureau there, which of course I hung around a lot. And it was possible to get magazine assignments in Atlanta, which would have been much more difficult in Raleigh.
I wonder, coming from Dunn, coming from country landscapes, southern landscapes, and then arriving in Atlanta, where I would think that you would just turn your head and there'd be something you want to take a picture of. I mean, was it overwhelming in some way because now your eyes were just flooded with all these images you wanted to get?
What was truly overwhelming was the realization of how little I knew about how to be a really good photographer. I was seeing people do great work. I was meeting life photographers. I was working with a photographer who worked regularly for national magazines. I was watching him put his photographs together stylistically and technically, and I realized I had so much to learn. But he told me a really wonderful thing. He says, you can be a great photographer, and you can travel around all you like, but a lot of what we call talent is really just being alert to what's around you, being sensitive to the people you meet, understanding who they're about, and just being alert to the issues that you see around you. And so that's what happened.
My guest is North Carolina photographer Burke Uzzell. His work is featured in exhibits at the Nasher Museum of Art in Durham, the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh, and later this month at the Ackland Art Museum in Chapel Hill. We'll have the pictures that we're speaking about on our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we'll continue to talk with Burke about taking pictures of Martin Luther King Jr. and Woodstock. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Phoebe Judge. My guest is North Carolina photographer Burke Uzzell. He's been taking photographs of American culture for more than six decades. His work is featured in exhibits at the Nasher Museum of Art in Durham, the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh, and later this month at the Ackland Art Museum in Chapel Hill. Burke, we were just talking about when you moved down to Atlanta. One of your first assignments was to take pictures of Martin Luther King Jr. Tell us about this assignment and how you felt going into it.
It was amazing. The photographer that I was working for as an assistant got hung up on an assignment out of town, and there was an assignment in the studio to photograph Martin Luther King in his living room in Atlanta. So I actually was substituting for my employer, and that was actually my very first magazine assignment, and it was for Jet Magazine. And so then I met Martin Luther King and saw the picture published, and of course, I had always been interested in the civil rights, really courtesy of my father, who was city manager of Dunn and who put his arms around everybody he ever met. So naturally, I identified very much with the civil rights movement and Martin Luther King, and followed his career and, of course, photographed a lot of that stuff over the next decade.
You were still fairly young at the time when you got this assignment. Did you have any hesitation approaching a figure like Martin Luther King? Or, I mean, what was that like? Were you nervous?
I'm always nervous in the en route to an assignment, but the minute I have to start functioning as a photographer, my concentration is on the graphics, the lighting, the technical issues, but prior to that, having a feel for the people, you know, you shake that hand, you look at those eyes, and you sense something important, and they hopefully sense it right back, which is you are there for them. It's important to respect your subject and to know your subject. So that when that chemistry starts, the nervousness ends, and it becomes an adventure of a wonderful sort into another person's world.
So you might have, I guess, I wonder if you might have a plan of how you're going to photograph someone or how you think you should, and then you meet them and you say, oh, I'm throwing that out the window. This is the way I should actually do it. Does it take seeing someone?
Boy, did you ever hit the nail on the head, because you always have a preconception of what you think that environment will be like. And then, of course, you walk in the door and it's very different. But no matter if the conception is true or not, the first thing you have to do is analyze the environment, you know, figure out what the graphics recommend, what are the dynamics of the room or the landscape, you know, what really speaks, what has drama, and what has potential to organize into a photograph that can be memorable and strong.
You were photographing in a part of a lot of the civil rights movement. You also were working during the time of a lot of Vietnam War protests. What was it like to bring your camera into these types of protests and some that got a little bit dicey, sometimes a little bit violent?
I certainly got pushed around a lot. I've been hurt on certain assignments. I've never been shot, but I've had people killed standing next to me, and I have been banged around a lot, but here I am, a survivor. It was certainly a dramatic decade. I saw a lot of terrible things happen, but they gave me hope. They gave me hope that we would be able to work together and be better. And people were singing, "Let us overcome." And you know, I was seeing Woodstock. I was seeing people doing good things as well as bad things, and on balance. The world did become a better place, and I became a better photographer for being their student.
I wonder, when we see pictures of these protest pictures, oftentimes it seems to me to be there's so much action going on. You know, there's the police and there's the protesters. How do you find the perfect image to capture all of that tension and action, which is kind of an intrinsic part of a protest?
I think it has a little bit to do with sort of athletic instincts. If you're catching a fly ball in an outfield, then you kind of run around and you see where the action is going to be. You see where you need to be at the right time, and in any sort of event that is happening as well, you know, there are vibes which that you see and you perceive, and you put yourself there. And sometimes you have to lower your head and jump in. You don't have to use your elbows to get other people out of the way sometimes. And I never liked working with telephoto lenses. I always felt that I had to be right in the middle of it to experience it myself in order to take photographs which resonated the way I felt the experience resonated with me. So that's where I put myself.
Later on, you took photos of Martin Luther King Jr.'s funeral. When did you hear about his assassination, and what went through your mind?
Oh my goodness, that was an awful moment. I was on an airplane flying back when he was killed, and my wife at the time met me at the gate at the airport and said, "Martin Luther King has just been killed. Here's a bag of film and a plane ticket on the next airplane going to Memphis. It leaves in 20 minutes." And she pushed me down toward the gate, and away I went. And it was a heartbreak. I loved the man.
The funeral must have been extremely wrenching to cover. There's a picture that you took of his family and his wife kind of looking off to the side. What did it mean to be at that funeral after spending time with him?
Well, what it meant was that I must, no matter what circumstances prevailed, I must serve the memory of that man as elegantly and eloquently as I possibly can. And the way people felt about him and demonstrated the way they felt in front of me was powerful. It moved me, and I became their voice to the best I could.
Do you ever worry about that, about invading someone's privacy at a time of a funeral, a time of the worst grief for someone? There you are with this camera. I mean, how do you overcome that? Because you are serving a very necessary purpose.
It's a dialogue. People give to me, and I give back to them. That's all I can say. I don't think of it as a selfish maneuver. I think of it as a gift that life offers me, and it's my duty to offer it back.
And I wonder if have you said this earlier, that if you express a genuine interest in someone, if you can look at them and say, I'm here for a reason, then you can pretty much take a photograph of anything as long as the person maybe thinks that you are there for good reason and there for an interested reason.
Yes, that's very true. The operative instinct is to be with them, to be involved with them, and not to be self-centered, self-focused on a career or what an editor thinks he might want. That's really the first lesson to learn in any of these circumstances is to decline magazine assignments and to work according to your own instincts.
Yeah, tell us about this. You've said that you don't like to work with editors for that exact reason, because they want a specific look and that can compromise the picture you take. So how has being outside of an editor's control shaped your work over the years?
Well, it's meant that sometimes I didn't get pictures published because I was on the dark side of an editor. But on things like Martin Luther King or the Woodstock experience, where I declined magazine assignments to photograph those, I would have not gotten the pictures I did had I been obeying their instincts, sitting in behind a desk somewhere, and particularly in the event of Woodstock, where I went there and I saw that people were doing what they were doing, and the music was interesting, of course, but people were getting undressed, up on the hillside.
Tell us about how you got to Woodstock, because you weren't there just necessarily on assignment. You were there with your family. What happened?
Well, my two young sons and my wife and I decided we would go camping beside a mountain stream we knew near Woodstock for the weekend, and we would go into Woodstock, hear some music, go back to the camp spot, and have a great day. Of course, we got in, couldn't get out, so there we were, and having the two young sons, we carried in animal crackers and canned fruit and a poncho, and made a place to sleep, made a house with a poncho beside a barbed wire fence, so I just started walking around and seeing what I saw.
What were you seeing?
Well, I was seeing this enormous crowd that showed up. The throughway was closed down. It was. They completely stopped bothering to try and sell tickets or take up tickets. There was virtually no security except your relationship with the person standing next to you. So it was America redefining its culture on a dime. It spun on a dime that weekend. And I was in the middle of it, and I'm so happy that I was able to spin on a dime along with the culture and not sit by the stage and photograph the musicians, as per my other photographers' instructions for their magazine editors.
Well, it's funny because now, all these years later, we think about the performances that happened at Woodstock on the stage, but really what everyone talks about is what happened out in that crowd. I mean, that was the real story.
It was an amazing thing to see, and the people were just incredible. They were muddy and wet. They took their clothes off, went in the lake. They kept their clothes off. They hung out with each other. They let it all hang out as they did all of that. There were some drugs involved, which I never participated in. I never smoked anything, took any drugs, don't drink. So I was probably the one photographer that'd get the whole kit and caboodle in focus.
And you actually borrowed some color film from one of those photographers down by the stage.
Oh, yeah. I kept going down to the stage to tell my photographer friends, hey, you really should take a look up on the hill. It's an amazing scene. And, of course, they declined, and I said, well, in that case, would you loan me some film? So, because I'd only carried in a pocket full of black and white film, expecting to be there a day.
Some of this colored film that you borrowed produced this iconic photo of the festival that became an album cover. Will you tell us about this photo, of this color photo of this couple kind of hugging each other? What is this picture?
That was taken at dawn, I think, on Saturday morning. Gracie Slick was singing, Bringing Up the Dawn. It was taken around 8:15 in the morning on a cloudy day, Bringing Up the Dawn. And it just meant so much to see to see those people hugging each other under that blanket. People were just sort of waking up, and they were there for each other. I don't think the blanket survived, but the marriage has. They got married after that. And I went back and took their picture as a couple on the 40th anniversary. And I'm pleased to say that they're still married happily and can't keep their hands off of each other, well in the tradition of Woodstock.
Well, there's hope for us all. My guest is North Carolina photographer Burke Uzzell. His work is featured in new exhibits at the Nasher Museum of Art in Durham, the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh, and later this month at the Ackland Art Museum in Chapel Hill. Burke, you now live in Wilson, North Carolina. Why did you decide to return back to Eastern North Carolina?
I had a wonderful couple of friends, Emily Cass, who is then director of the Ackland Museum, and her husband, Charles Weinraub, who kept saying, Burke, North Carolina is not the same way it was. You should come back and have a look. They knew I was unhappy with Seattle, where I lived for a while. I came back. I lived with them for weeks. Looked all over the state, and I decided, you know what? They're right. North Carolina is a very cool place, and I'm going to move here. So I looked at towns all over the state, settled on Wilson because it was practical, beautiful. The people were friendly. I wasn't going to get washed away by the waves in Wilmington. I wasn't going to freeze to death in Asheville. And it was a place that I could afford, and it was close to the Triangle. So it served a lot of purposes, and it offered me the ability to be around the people, the type of people that I had grown up with, and I very much wanted to photograph them, and I wanted to pay homage to what I consider some of the really great people I've ever met, which are the Eastern North Carolina folks, and the landscape, which fascinates me endlessly.
Yeah, let's talk about some more of your work that kind of highlights the South. Will you tell us about this photo, Whitewater Nash? And it's creating a dialogue between the natural landscape and a more junkyard setting because there's this beautiful background, these trees and green and all these colors, and then this car, this junk, which is kind of right there in the front of it.
Well, when I think of poetry in the southern landscape, I, of course, immediately think of fall landscapes in the mountains or wherever, and the colors and rushing streams, and so I am always happy to take a serious look at that sort of environment. But lo and behold, there in the foreground was this yellow old car, a Nash, propped up on tires, sort of its rear end hanging out over this rushing stream. And for me, it offers the dialogue between the natural beauty of the South and the sad tragedy of what we've done to the landscape by not being careful with our trash and our junkyards. But on the other hand, all of it together does create an interestingly graphical presentation of that can be viewed as both humor and social comment, which is something I like very much to do in my work. I like my photographs to have multiple subject lines, and it's something I learned very early on as a photographer by studying really the Renaissance painters and those wonderful old history paintings. So those are my touchstones in the history of art, and I can do that with a picture like Whitewater Nash.
How have you seen the South documented by other photographers, maybe interlopers? Do they do it justice?
I think very often they do. There's something to be said for coming in unwashed unfastened a bit to the landscape. Just come in and see what you see and take a beautiful photograph of it. And I think there's an awful lot of very fine work done that way. I mean, I've certainly done that in going to other countries. But what I will say, though, is that when I think you truly know and feel something, you tend to go slower, you dig a little deeper, and you sit until it speaks to you in a much more inner way. And I'm very proud of the fact that I've returned to the South, and I have given myself to the South in every possible way. And I think it's showing up in my work.
Is it that your eye looks for something maybe that an outsider doesn't see? Maybe an outsider looks for the thing that would be the first, you know, the thing that they want to find, but the insider looks for the things that maybe are around them all the time.
Well, the first thing that happens is that my mind, to some degree, directs my heart in that it puts me in a place. My heart then directs my eye. I take photographs with my mind and my heart seen through an eye. So the eye really, really is at the service of the heart, and the heart is Southern.
I just want to talk about one last picture. This is the photo's barn with deer. It's a winter scene. There's a deer carcass in it, but it's incredibly beautiful. Will you tell us about it?
That's another situation where happiness is found on a back road deep into nowhere I could probably ever find again. And you see this lovely scene. The graphics are incredible. There's the road and the snow. It's just absolutely a perfect composition. And I see that, and I get out, and I walk around. And then lo and behold, there's this this deer carcass on a fence in the near left foreground. And that's put there both as a counterpoint to the, I put that very consciously in a corner of the photograph. I don't like to put the punchline of a photograph, if that can be considered the punchline, as it does offer a dialogue to the perfect landscape. But if it offers a dialogue and a punchline, then I'd like to be somewhat subtle with it. I like to hide it off in a corner, and I like for it to be found rather the punchline not hit you over the head with a baseball bat, right slap dab in the center of the frame. That's the difference between journalism and art. Journalism needs to just to bang the subject matter right into you immediately. And I think the more artistic approach is to let it grow on you with a bit of subtlety and a more interesting graphical content.
Well, it's all very beautiful work. My guest is North Carolina photographer Burke Uzzell. His work is featured in exhibits at the Nasher Museum of Art in Durham, the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh, and later this month at the Ackland Art Museum in Chapel Hill. Just ahead, do you think you know the fastest moving creature on Earth? It might not be what you think. We'll tell you the answer just ahead on The State of Things.